Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor, held all Europe in the balance at a crucial moment in history. His goal was imperial hegemony over Christendom, a Pax Habsburgica, the Habsburg Peace. A united Christendom, under the Emperor's banner, could then fulfil the declared intention of his royal and ducal forebears and wage a holy war, a crusade against the Ottoman Turks, in the hope of reclaiming Constantinople and even Jerusalem. Charles would be a second Constantine. Against these dreams, Charles faced what would ultimately prove to be intractable obstacles, in the form of Luther's religious revolution in Germany, Henry VIII's split from Rome, a resurgent and treacherous France, and even a rejuvenated and independent papacy. The failure of Charles was a failure with many precedents in the long history of the Holy Roman Empire. How to hold an empire, an entire Catholic Christian civilization together through a fraught system predicated on personal fealty at a time when the personal in politics was being overridden by the advent of impersonal and bureaucratic institutions which would come to embody the functions of the modern state. Through his inheritance alone, Charles was one of the most consequential figures in European political history since his namesake, Charlemagne, Charles the Great. This inheritance can only be described as a masterstroke, a miracle of dynastic politics, an empire born not of war, but of marriage, a realization of the two famous mottos of Charles's Austrian House of Habsburg, Austria est imperiare orbi universo, all the world is subject to Austria, and Ali bella gerunt tu Felix Austria nubi, others wage war, but you, Austria, will marry. Through his grandmothers, Isabella and Mary, Charles inherited Castile and Burgundy, encompassing the modern-day Benelux and parts of France. Through his grandfathers, Ferdinand and Maximilian, Charles would inherit the crown of Aragon, Catalonia, Valencia, Sardinia, Sicily and Naples, and Austria itself. Combined to these possessions, Charles would be elected Holy Roman Emperor, the nominal suzerain of Germany and northern Italy, and the highest sovereign in Europe. If one compares this empire with previous European empires, one can see that with the exception of France, or West Francia as it was then called, Charles's empire was more impressive than that of Charlemagne. Indeed, Charlemagne's Carolingian dynasty, as with the Merovingian dynasty that preceded it, adopted the disastrous policy of dividing the imperial territory upon the ruler's death. With the exception of the Habsburgs in Austria, Charles's successors would hold this disparate union of territories together for 200 years. In fact, Charles's empire resembles more closely the territories of the Western Roman Empire. The comparison with the Roman Empire in the West carries more weight when Charles's annexation of the Duchy of Milan, a former Western Roman capital, and his aspirations to establish a Habsburg dominion over North Africa. Added to these European territories were the impressive Spanish conquest in the New World, from Peru to Mexico, justifying Charles's new motto of plus ultra, further and beyond. With such advantages, why did Charles fail to establish a Pax Habsburgica in Europe? The crucial turning point lies in Charles's failure to exploit the fruits of his greatest military triumph, the Battle of Pavia, the first of many defeats snatched from the jaws of victory. The Europe of the medieval age, following the restoration of the empire in the West with Charlemagne, was underscored by feudalism, a hierarchical, ad hoc system predicated on the fealty of a vassal to one's liege with reciprocal obligations. Feudum, or a fief, from which the word feudalism is derived, denotes a grant of land based on service. The system was by no means uniform or universal, as is the case of the Italian communes or the free and imperial cities of Germany. But the concept helps explain the proliferation of sovereign powers in Europe and the devolution of authority within said powers. The empire, far from exercising imperium in the way that the Romans understood it, was but a component of the myriad that was the European Christian order, or Res Publica Christiana. While Catholic Christendom stretched from Portugal to Finland, the empire was confined to Germany and its smaller neighbours, with a hotly contested authority over northern Italy. The greatest challenge to the empire's supremacy came from the Pope, who successfully wrested spiritual supremacy over Christendom from the emperor in the 11th century. The empire was decentralized, and the church was in effect an independent power. Rather than challenging this system, Charles V's empire was a product of this system, a system he hoped to tinker with and improve. Each of his inheritances came with their own cultures, languages, legal systems, political institutions, and crucially, presumptions of liberty. The emperor did not establish a uniform system of law, taxation, or even levying soldiers for his constant wars. The burden of the empire disproportionately fell on Castile and Spain. For Charles, this system was captured in the expression, "To be king of all is to be king of each." This was illustrated by Charles's creation of councils, bearing a somewhat similarity to the circles or Christ in the Holy Roman Empire. The councils facilitated the rule of a multitude of kingdoms under an absentee king, yet ensured they were kept apart. As this collection of kingdoms was unified in the person of the King Emperor, why couldn't the rest of Europe follow suit and acknowledge the emperor's ultimate sovereignty over Christendom, while each principality could retain their own local character? This conception was undergirded by the emperor's dynastic conception of his own position. His grandfather, Maximilian, Holy Roman Emperor, was the great myth-maker of the Habsburg dynasty, turning his Alpine capital of Innsbruck into a model of chivalric court culture. Yet Charles's branch of the House of Habsburg was not that of Austria, but that of Burgundy. Brought up in Ghent, speaking French with French favourites, Charles was at the centre of the most sophisticated court culture in Europe, which his grandfather in Innsbruck could only emulate. The centre of the court was the Order of the Golden Fleece, established by Duke Philip the Good of Burgundy. Although inspired by Jason and his Argonauts, the intent of this order was the exaltation of the Catholic faith and the maintenance of knightly virtues. Membership was both exclusive, and members were reviewed on the basis of their chivalric deeds. Members also had the exclusive right to legal jurisdiction under the order, trial, and even custody under the order in the case of crimes. With Charles as sovereign, the order had the right to be consulted before the declaration of wars. Given its status as an authority unto itself and as a council to the emperor, why could the princes not be organized along the lines of the order? Princes, accountable only to each other and to the emperor, whose purpose was to embody piety and virtue and defend the Catholic faith against heretics and the advance of Islam. It is not a coincidence that Philip, founder of the Order of the Golden Fleece, hosted a magnificent banquet of the Oath of the Pheasant, whose purpose was to formally implore the order to embark on a crusade to reclaim Constantinople. But what of the practicalities? Though the threat of Islam was real, the unity of Christendom was unravelling, just as Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent captured Belgrade and threatened the interior of Hungary. Beyond Luther in Germany, Charles had inherited a conflict with France. While the principal theatre of war was in Italy, precipitated by France when King Charles VIII had tried and failed to claim Naples, the rivalry between the Habsburgs and France dated back to the 1470s, when Burgundy came to the Habsburgs by marriage. With the death of the last independent duke, Charles the Bold, King Louis XI of France escheated the territories of the Duke within France itself, exploiting the temporary power vacuum to seize land for the crown. Nevertheless, thanks to the Habsburgs' marriage policy, France, nominally the greatest of the European kingdoms outside of the empire, was surrounded by Habsburg possessions. While the conflict in Italy focused on the recovery of specific territories, such as Naples and Milan, the 65-year war was a contest for European supremacy. When Francis I inherited the throne in 1515, he prosecuted the Italian wars with a renewed vigour that saw Milan fall under French control yet again. The soon-to-be emperor's Francophone ministers were forced to reach a détente with Francis in order for the young Charles of Ghent to claim his Spanish inheritance. With Charles's inheritances and the imperial throne secured, Habsburg forces were once again on the offensive, culminating at the Battle of Pavia. Pavia was the Agincourt of the Italian wars. The great nobles of France and Navarre, who were not slain on the battlefield, were captured, including French marshals de la Marque and de Montmorency, and King Francis himself. The immediate effect of Pavia was to confirm Habsburg hegemony in northern Italy. Milan would come to Charles after the death of the last Sforza Duke in 1535. But what to do with the captured King Francis? There was a precedent for this exact situation. After the Battle of Poitiers during the Anglo-French Hundred Years' War, King John the Good, John II of France, was captured by the English, and in return for his release had surrendered a significant portion of French territory in Aquitaine, and offered his son as a hostage. When his son escaped, King John willingly surrendered himself to the English, as the conditions of his ransom had been violated. In the king's absence, France became embroiled in a civil conflict known as the Jacquerie. After a short stint in a Spanish prison, France was released by Charles under eerily similar conditions. Hostages were exchanged, and a treaty was signed in Madrid that confirmed the restoration of Burgundy proper to Charles, the region seized 50 years prior by Louis XI. Unlike John the Good, Francis immediately repudiated the treaty. Charles had looked to the precedent of France's ancestor and to his own conception of knightly virtue, and held Francis to the standards of both. Indeed, allowing Francis to retain the French throne, albeit humbled, fits into the emperor's conception of reciprocal obligations, of the higher law pertaining to princes, and the practical need of having effective allies for the ultimate showdown against the Turks and the Lutherans. Opposing the release of Francis was Charles's imperial chancellor, Mercurino di Gattinara. Unlike Charles, de Gattinara understood that in the era of Machiavelli, the political climate of Europe had superseded Charles's idealistic conception of the honour of princes. Moreover, the chancellor appreciated the supreme importance of Burgundy. Charles V had no fixed capital, yet having arrived in Castile as a Francophone foreigner, the Spanish ultimately captured their king, and Charles's son Philip II would establish his fixed capital in the heart of Spain, in Madrid. This was to the ultimate detriment of this idea of the Habsburg peace, a universal Christendom or monarchy. Charles's ancestor, the Duke Charles the Bold of Burgundy, had attempted to string his vast inheritance of French, Dutch, and Flemish territories into a continuous state and ultimately a kingdom. Philip the Good, despite the refinement of his court and his style as Grand Duke of the West, was ultimately nothing more than a vassal of the King of France and the Emperor. Charles the Bold desired sovereignty, a legally constituted nation, independent of both France and Germany, reviving the ancient Lothringia or Middle Francia. He failed, his state fragmented, and his dynasty ended in the male line, passing to the Habsburgs. Yet Charles V was heir to that legacy and to the claim on those territories. More so, Charles, through his Aragonese kingdom, had a claim on Provence, France's pivotal strategic outlet into the Mediterranean and gateway into Italy. Moreover, Provence and its surrounding territories throughout Savoy, the Languedoc, the Dauphin, and Lyon had once belonged to the Arelate, a constituent kingdom of the Holy Roman Empire, the old Kingdom of Burgundy. All these territories have been recent additions to France, Provence having been acquired, like Burgundy, by Louis XI. A justification therefore existed for a network of territories that ran through the Rhone and the Alps up to the mouth of the Rhine on the North Sea to be claimed by the Emperor, by Charles V. If one attaches France's Mediterranean coastline, then Spain and the Arelate become physically connected, connecting Spain further through Savoy into Italy. France is denied a Mediterranean outlet and is further enveloped by Habsburg territory, cutting France off from Italy and Germany. Charles the Bold had died attempting to link his southern capital of Dijon with his northern capital of Mechelen near Brussels. The link to these territories was in Lorraine, a Francophone imperial vassal with its capital at Nancy, potentially serving as the capital of a third kingdom of Burgundy. Nancy, as a potential capital for Charles V, lay close to the major waterways intersecting his territories, the Rhone and the Meuse, the latter serving as the border of the Holy Roman Empire in the west against France. The Western Roman Empire had moved its capital from Rome to Milan and ultimately to Ravenna. Both locations were chosen for their strategic advantages over Rome. Indeed, Constantinople in the Eastern Roman Empire was the best example of choosing strategic sites as capitals. The new capitals afforded the Roman emperors the ability to quickly confront dangers on multiple fronts. Setting the capital at Nancy would place Charles V in striking distance of Paris and the Lutheran rebels in Germany, not to mention four of the empire's seven electorates, Trier, Mainz, Cologne, and the Palatinate, and the coronation sites of Frankfurt and Aachen. With the emperor situated within the borders of the Holy Roman Empire, holding sway over various electors, holding territories that economically rivaled, if not surpassed, Charles's younger brother Ferdinand in Austria and Bohemia, Charles would be able to assert the dominance of the Burgundian branch of the House of Habsburg over its Austrian counterpart, ensuring that the imperial title remained with Charles's rather than Ferdinand's successors. That, and the pressure Charles's heirs could exert over the electors into perpetuity. Moreover, Nancy had the advantage of proximity to the Burgundian ducal capital in Dijon, the Franche-Comte capital in Besançon, the principal entrepot on the Rhone in Lyon, and the major Belgian cities of Brussels, Ghent, Bruges, and Antwerp. The Netherlands also enjoyed some of the greatest autonomy within the lands of Charles V. These lands were extremely wealthy. Antwerp had come to replace Florence as the financial capital of Europe. Charles the Bold had resorted to increasingly brutal tactics to impose his authority, ultimately to no avail. The breach in the Habsburg Empire, the beginning of the end, would originate in the Netherlands. Had Charles pursued a Burgundian strategy, giving Dutch geographic proximity to the imperial capital, the likelihood of a Dutch secession would have fallen dramatically. Had Charles not chosen Nancy's capital, Arles or Marseille both had utility as imperial capitals, were Charles to have centralized operations in the Mediterranean, closer to Barbary North Africa, Sultan Suleiman, the Ottoman Emperor, and even Charles's own bankers in Genoa. Indeed, given Charles's conflict with Pope Clement VII, the possibility existed that Charles could have taken Rome rather than bungling into sacking it, as would eventually occur, and potentially even reinstated a captive Avignon papacy a short distance away from Arles. Charles could thus realise the imperial ambition of supremacy over spiritual as well as temporal matters at a time when the Catholic Church was under attack and leadership of the reform movement was under question. Would a grand strategy of the Habsburg Empire, centred on Burgundy, complicates Spain's relationship with its colonies. Consider that the Spanish Habsburgs used their empire in the Americas to prop up their situation in Europe, and that Catholic Christendom, and this was not the other way round. Had the Spanish Habsburgs explicitly opted for a global maritime empire, Madrid was ultimately a poor choice for Spain's capital when options such as Seville and later Lisbon presented themselves. Having outlined the advantages of a Burgundian imperial core, we come back to Charles's critical mistake in releasing King Francis. Francis understood that beyond notions of chivalry and any duty to uphold the terms of his ransom, once released, he had various justifications to repudiate his treaty with the emperor. As a prisoner, he could claim duress. As France was then legally constituted, France could, and would claim, that he lacked the authority to surrender French territory without the consent of France's highest court, the Paris Parlement. Moreover, Charles's many European rivals would welcome any weakening of the emperor's position over questions of France's honour. Indeed, had France willingly surrendered French territory on its own volition, the authority of the French monarchy would crater within France itself. There is finally the question of the injured honour of France and the desire to avenge the loss at Pavia. It is no wonder, then, why Francis repudiated the Treaty of Madrid. So, how would a longer or permanent imprisonment of Francis help Charles realise the Burgundian strategy? Louise of Savoy, the Queen Mother, would become regent of France as Francis's sons were 7 and 6. Charles V actually had the advantage here over Edward III after Poitiers, as in 1356 the capable Dauphin would assume the regency in the name of his father John the Good. Louise of Savoy would be confronted by the same challenges that faced Catherine de' Medici decades later, a revolt of the French nobility against the power of the crown. In the aftermath of the Hundred Years' War, the kings of France attempted to consolidate their position vis-à-vis the nobility, but this issue would not be settled until the 1660s. Charles the Bold, himself a premier French noble, had attempted to undermine Louis XI by appealing to the rights of the French nobility against the king. During the regency of Charles VIII, Louis, the Duke of Orléans, had appealed to the Habsburgs in Burgundy to seize the regency for himself. In summary, Francis's incarceration afforded Charles V any number of opportunities to play the nobility off against the monarchy. Indeed, this is what his son, Philip II of Spain, would do with the House of Guise and the Catholic League. Louise of Savoy, a cunning and ruthless political operative whose sole claim to power rested on her absentee son, understood this. Indeed, this would have given Charles V all the necessary leverage to demand Burgundy, Provence, if not even greater concessions. Had Louise resisted Charles's demands at the peril of her son, Charles had other options. The imperial army that had crushed the French at Pavia was commanded by Charles de Bourbon, a former constable of France whose lands had been confiscated by Louise of Savoy. Charles could enter France promising prominent nobles vast grants of land under the sovereignty of the emperor. In Lorraine, for example, the emperor could bargain for a strip of land, potentially through Nancy or Barois, to connect his French lands with the Netherlands. In return, the House of Lorraine and later the House of Guise could be rewarded with lands in Champagne or some similar arrangement. Charles III of Savoy, whose lands had been repeatedly invaded by the French, as a vassal of the Emperor, could claim the Dauphin region, while the Emperor would take Provence and French Burgundy to restore the Arelat. Yet all these potential enfeoffments paled in comparison to the ambitions of the King of England, Henry VIII, and the potential of the Anglo-Imperial Alliance. Prior to Francis's release, Henry had been one of Charles V's greatest assets. Henry had designs on the French throne and expanding his realm from the sole French continental possession at Calais. Alongside Charles's campaigns in Italy, Henry opened a second front against Francis in the north. Though Henry had failed to support the emperor at Pavia, in recognising Henry's ambitions in France alongside his own, possibly with a grant of Normandy and Brittany, the power of the French monarchy to resist Charles's Burgundian strategy would be further diminished. With the question of France and the Italian War settled by a combination of these means, the emperor would have a free hand to deal with the Lutherans in Germany, the machinations of Pope Clement VII against Charles's imperial designs in Italy and beyond in broader Christendom, while offering support to his brother Ferdinand against the Ottoman Turks. Instead, what were the ramifications of Charles's fateful decision to release Francis? As we know, Charles would go on to repudiate the treaty. Henry VIII, denied his ambitions in France by the emperor, would conclude the Treaty of Hampton Court with Francis, agreeing to forfeit his alliance with Charles. One wonders if Charles had been more generous to his English allies, perhaps even offering his support in the cause of the king's annulment from Charles's aunt, Catherine of Aragon, whether the English Reformation would have even occurred. In Italy, Francis and Pope Clement VII quickly contrived the League of Cognac, pitting the smaller Italian states and rival families against the Habsburgs, so commencing the chain of events that led to the tragedy of the sack of Rome in 1527 by Charles's troops. In 1526, the Hungarian King Louis was felled by the Ottomans at the Battle of Mohács. Budapest fell, and Hungary would be divided among the Habsburgs, the Ottomans, and their Transylvanian subjects. Within 3 years, the Ottomans would be besieging Vienna, while Charles V was otherwise distracted. The Austrian Habsburgs and the Eastern Holy Roman Empire survived only by the skin of the teeth. Rather than Charles's ascent precipitating a pan-European crusade against the Ottomans, as conceived of by Duke Philip the Good, a divided Europe enabled Sultan Suleiman to expand the Ottoman Empire to its greatest territorial extent, with its borders reaching from Austria to Persia and to Algeria and North Africa. In Suleiman's war against the Habsburgs, he made common cause with the Protestants in Germany. Perhaps the greatest betrayal by King Francis of Charles's dream of Pax Habsburgica was the alliance made between France and the Ottomans. French ports were open to Barbary corsairs who raided the Spanish coastline with impunity. Charles's expedition to Algiers and the potential of a restored Christian authority in the former Roman provinces of Africa and Mauritania, a continuation of the Reconquista, amounted to little more than establishing temporary holdouts. It is curious that Francis did not complete his total repudiation of Charles's exaltation of the Catholic faith and a united Christendom by embracing the nascent Reformed Christianity of John Calvin, instead of reacting violently against it as he did following the affair of the placards. John Calvin, rather than establishing himself as the Genevan Savonarola and subversive evangelist to the French nobility, would then occupy a position in French history closer to that of Thomas Cranmer in England. The emperor's prevarication against Lutheranism and failed attempts at compromise only allowed their movements to strengthen. Unable to reconcile the Protestants to Charles's own Reformation efforts, the cause of the Reformation of the Catholic Church would be undertaken by Pope Paul III and the convening of the Council of Trent. The Tridentine Reform, coupled with the Protestant perception of the Pope as the Antichrist, permanently divided Christendom. The latter could only be overcome now by military force. While Charles's victory over the Protestants in the Schmalkaldic War offered him a temporary relief, the failure of this French policy would come to haunt him once more. With the Italian Wars effectively decided in the Habsburgs' favour, a Habsburg military victory in Germany presented a disaster scenario for the new French King Henry II. Then an opportunity presented itself to Henry when Charles's Saxon ally Maurice betrayed him. France, in common cause with the German princes, dealt Charles a string of devastating defeats. The emperor, betrayed also by his own son Philip and brother Ferdinand, who had no interest in pursuing further Charles's dreams of a united Christendom under the emperor's leadership, felt compelled to abdicate. Henry II made precise and calculated territorial demands of the three imperial bishoprics of Toul, Verdun, and Metz. Augmenting these territorial gains, Henry II married the Dauphin into the Lorrainer House of Guise. Henry's gains established French control over key strategic sites, sites that would serve as the defensive bulwark of eastern France for centuries. Henry's conquests made clear that he appreciated the implications of a grand Burgundian strategy perhaps more than Charles ever did. France's gains intersected the route from the free County of Burgundy to the Habsburg Netherlands. The three bishoprics also surrounded the city of Nancy, Charles's and Charles the Bold's would-be capital. With this masterstroke, Henry II had denied Charles and his successor, Philip II, the possibility of realising the dream of Charles the Bold and establishing a united Burgundian kingdom at the head of an empire centred on Lorraine. It also began France's expansion towards the Rhine. Had Henry II not died prematurely, France would have no doubt capitalised on these gains, and the pervading unrest in the Habsburg Netherlands during the 1560s and 70s to seize the Netherlands for France. This unfortunate turn of events for Charles V, the failure of his dream of united Christendom, began with his failure to seriously consider and execute a Burgundian grand strategy, a missed opportunity which pertained to that great, fateful misadventure, the release of Francis, a decision that predicated the future of Europe solely upon the honour of the King of France.